All right, welcome to Bet the Edge. I'm Jay Croucher here with Drew Dinsick. We're recording late Tuesday afternoon. Today, Drew, we're going to go through every single NBA awards market, a rapid fire through all of these. I think there is a misprice in every single one of these markets. So looking forward to talking about them to varying degrees anyway. So I'm like,
sure,
you know, Rudy Gobert, I think, is still mispriced. Not like there's a ton of meat on the bone, but still. And then we're going to talk about the Eastern Conference market. And play devil's advocate and whether any team can take down Boston, who is best placed to do so. But let's start off with these awards. Let's start with, I think, the kind of hottest award du jour, at least in terms of the discourse around it and what's happened to shift the market, with the sixth man of the year favorite, Malik Monk, spraining his MCL out 4 to 6 weeks, so obviously done for the regular season. He's in the minus 400 type of range. He's drifted to minus 150. Naz Reid, the Emmanuel Quickly type runner, trying to win it in the last sprint, is plus 150. Norm Powell is kind of hanging around, plus 800. And then your man Bobby Portis is 40-1. I don't think he's going to get there. What do you make of this market now?
Yeah,
is out.
A little bit of a gift because what are we, a week removed from Malik Monk being minus 1,000? Like, this was a wrap a week ago, and now it's not. That feels like, didn't feel great. You know, you a little not how you want to win. Yeah, but that said, he's very vulnerable, and the Kings are very vulnerable. Right now, the Kings, realistically, getting into the playoff mix cleanly as a six seed is starting to feel very unlikely. And, you know, if they have to win on the road in the 7-8 or defend home court against, a coming Warriors or a coming Lakers team, it doesn't feel like they're going to be favored even at home in the elimination game for the 8 seed. So Kings kind of with their lives in, you know, playoff lives in the balance now, and no Herder, no Monk is a problem. That's going to hurt Monk, even though, you know, he wouldn't necessarily be disqualified from this award, because just for perfect, you know, transparency, when, if you haven't already read the rules, 65 games does not apply to six man. And even if it did, it's 62 with the injury caveat would have covered the candidacy of Monk. So he will be considered. He will get votes. But I think there are going to be enough people that leave Monk off entirely because of the team, just the team struggles of the Kings and Monk's kind of tenuous hold at the top of the list here, that it's going to leave the door open for some of these other runners. And Reed is the obvious first choice out of those. And it's pretty clear because of his impact on what the Wolves have done, and the Wolves being able to kind of hold on to, hopes of a one seed in the absence of Karl Anthony Towns. Like, you want to give Naz Reid all the credit for that? I'm not going to stop you. Like, his specific ability to step in and kind of play the key role there to keep this team afloat and get wins, hard fought wins like they did against Denver to lock up the tiebreak. Like, yeah, I think you have to kind of consider Naz as the guy, and Norm Powell is the outsider. And what is your current thought on this market? Do you think that the price adjustment is fair? Do you think that there is less optimism in terms of Monk still being the favorite?
So I'll say that sometimes in these awards with a favorite, and I think that at the time he got hurt, Monk would have basically been off the board to win the market if the vote was held that day. Sometimes an injury can help the favorite because it just locks in their case.
Sure.
For instance, like, I think he's going to win anyway. It doesn't really matter. But like Connor Hellebuck to win the Vezina in the NHL, like, if he'd just gotten hurt 2 weeks ago, it would have been the best thing in the world for his case, because then he's played enough games and it just locks in his numbers and he will win. With this, I think this is unambiguously bad for Monk, even though there were, it takes out the, I mean, he hadn't made a shot for like a week and a half before he got hurt, and it kind of tanked his season-long efficiency numbers, where now you look at them, it's like 44% from the field, 35% from three, 56.4% true shooting, which is below average, bad defensive player, they're an 8 seed, but he's still 15-5. still lapping all candidates in terms of points per game and assists per game. And so I think that it's bad for him that he got hurt, just because it's harder to, you know, have build recency bias and have a campaign behind you at the end if you are hurt. At the same time, someone who's been leading, or at least trying to lead, the anti-Malik Monk operation, I think of all the people kind of in our circle and other people who I've spoken to at better wards, I'm probably the least bullish in terms of this is like this dooms Malik Monk. Like, I don't think it does that at all, really. I think that he's still the most likely winner. I think that the fact, like, he's played 72 games. Like, he's going to miss the last 9 games of the season. There's 8 games left. Like, if this had happened 3 weeks ago, right? 72. He's played 72 already. Okay. Yeah, like, hadn't missed a game, basically. Oh, wow. He might have missed one or something. So he's fine on that front. And I think that he was pretty entrenched. Now, the thing is that there is a chance that, and I think Nazareth is the guy. Like, Nazareth is the guy who's going to catch him, if anyone is. There is a chance that with Naz, he will just have so much narrative, and he's like each night he's set for like 17.5, 18.5 points in the market, that he could just storm home and take it from Monk. I don't really see it with Norm Powell. And believe me, I want to see it with Norm Powell. He's my best result in the market, everything. I just think there's an aspect there. And came for your thoughts, Drew, of like, if you're the best swordsman in the world, you don't fear the second best swordsman. You fear the most unconventional. And I feel like Norm Powell is like second best swordsman-y, where he's just kind of like, he's got more points per game than Reed and he's more efficient. But Naz Reed has this one. He's just a way different player to Monk. He's a big man. His advanced stats are really good. His on-off is amazing. He's on a team that's competing for the one seed, whereas the Clippers is kind of like this four seed that's stumbling a bit. And so I think that Naz is the guy who can really build momentum I don't really see it for Powell, but what do you think of that?
Yeah, that's fair. Shame on me, by the way. I had my basketball reference years sorted to oldest to newest. And so I'm like, oh, yeah, Monk's only got 63. Well, that was his rookie season. He has played 72 games. Anyway, Norm Powell, he's quietly been very good in the last five games for the Clippers. The Clippers have in general been, you know, playing with more enthusiasm, a little bit less lethargy, a little bit less, kind of just lack of interest in competing. Impressive win against Orlando over the weekend, backed up with just a throttling of Charlotte. And yeah, I mean, you know, Powell's in the closing five. He's a hugely important player for their ultimate success. He is a true six. He's kind of the true six man archetype. The Naz Reed being a little bit of a novelty in a year where there's really no true good candidates feels like the right choice here. So that's not to say that Norm Powell and the Clippers in general can't change people's minds, because there was a good month stretch where the Clippers were the best team in basketball, or at least co-best teams with the Celtics.
Sure.
They have largely taken a huge step backwards with just overall level of effort in some of the time and games played since the All-Star break. But, none of that really gets hung on Norm Powell. He missed three kind of meaningless games in the middle of March, but otherwise has been very available for these guys. He's been contributed. He's making his second start of the season tonight in place of Kawhi Leonard. He's done it mostly from the bench. So, yeah, I mean, he's probably going to be, if people are leaving Monk off for whatever reason, because they can't trust the Kings, can't vote for a King. Kings are, not even going to make the playoffs, Jay. If that's sort of the mentality where people are leaving him off ballot, which I could see, because people weirdly treat Sixth Man of the Year as we need to reward a team that won a lot of games. I think Powell could be the beneficiary of a lot of second place votes, but I think the more novel candidate is certainly Naz Reed.
Yep. And I just think that the team success aspect, the narrative aspect of not having Towns, Naz has just got like a way better PR campaign behind him as well. He's constantly gets asked about Sixth Man of the Year, as Powell is just weirdly a little bit more anonymous, even though he plays on, the bigger market team and he's been a more established player than Reed. But I think that my sense is that I just don't have a great grasp for this market, because it's just a weird situation where, you have the favorite going down with 9 games left, and you have, the presumptive challenger is now like a starter and a big man who's averaging 13 points per game, but he's got all this PR behind him and he's like a Twitter sensation and everyone loves Naz Reid. So I just don't have a great feel for how this is going to unfold. It's just that as someone who's very anti-Monk, I'm not filled with the confidence that I hoped I would be, but I could very easily be wrong. And I will make one prediction. I don't know how this award is going to unfold, but I'm pretty confident that, rightly or not, and maybe it will be justified, I'm not sure, I think Naz Reid is going to flip into favorite at this market at some point, because the market moves off of big scoring nights. And Naz, like, he's just going to have a night where he scores 25, most likely, because, you know, he's had a few of those nights without Towns, and he's setting the market close to 20 points per game every night. And he takes a lot of threes, and he's high variance that way. So I think that he will have one of those nights, and people really believe in him. I want to believe in him a little bit more than I do, but I think he's certainly very live, and I will be cheering for it. And I hope that I hope my pessimism is wrong.
Fun little trivia for you on the way out the door here. According to Basketball Reference, his top nickname, Big Jelly.
Oh yeah.
Let's go, Big Jelly. Let's go, Big Jelly. Let's get this award home, and you know, Sixth Man of the Year to Big Jelly. This makes sense to me.
Yep. Let's do it, Naz. All right. Let's talk about MVP, which is a market that is seemingly, a little bit more doubt than I thought it would be, where Nikola Jokic is minus 700, still big favorite, but he got into minus 1500 or thereabouts pretty recently. Luka Doncic, presumptive challenger in the market, at least, is plus 550. Shea is 20-1. Giannis and Tatum aren't going to win the award. They're 100-1. I think this is completely off, but what do you think about this market?
Yeah, I was hopeful that you had some hot takes on this one, and of all the ones we're going to talk about today, because it has been a good 2 weeks since we basically put this one to bed. And yet you look around sort of the kind of what is being pushed out there as far as content goes, and some of the voices in particular, and it is not clear and obvious that people with votes are going to just, you know, pencil in Jokic at the top and then really think hard about who's my number two. I was surprised also by, you have stuff like Stephen A. Smith, we'll use him as an example. Like, is he like the driving trend? You know, is he kind of a thought leader in the NBA among voting circle? No, but he's very, very, very high profile voice. And he came out and was very clear and straightforward. My choice is Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. And that gets circulated on Twitter. And you know what almost every single response was? It wasn't like, oh, come on, get out of here, it's clearly Jokic. It was, oh, come on, get out of here, it's clearly Luka. Right? So like basically the entire internet is just caught up in what the Mavericks are doing right now and the recency bias of how good they are playing right now and how easy Luka Doncic's offense is coming to him, and that's, people are just kind of like stuck in that loop. And it's like, wait a second, if like the people who have votes are making the case for Shea, and Shea could potentially still very clearly steal the one seed, and you know, Nuggets, their best chances maybe being healthy, maybe giving Jokic a couple nights off, definitely giving Murray a couple of nights off, if they all of a sudden are clearly locked into the three and Luka Doncic and the Mavs are the four, like, is that, you know, like, is this a split vote three ways? And at which point is it realistic that, you know, Jokic is in any way a minus 700 favorite? So, you know, I think this one, which seemed to be pretty, you know, pretty much put to bed, is very, very much not. And I don't know exactly what has happened where people are still like, the market still very much respects the Nuggets. Like, in fact, we talked about this yesterday. I think the Nuggets price to win the West is absolutely absurd considering their path to the finals could be quite challenging. Series by series prices, especially if it's unfavorable, if they have to go Mavs, let's say they have to go Mavs, Thunder, Timberwolves to get to the finals or something like that. Like, this could get real weird and real challenging for this team. And I'm not 100% sure why the luster is off of Jokic. But it certainly feels like the cultural zeitgeist is against him at the moment.
Yeah, I have three opinions about this market. The first one is, I think that Luka Doncic has been too short of an MVP price every single day of his career. Like, he has been too short. Just constantly. He begins every season like plus 500, plus 600, even though the Mavs have a win total of like 47.5.
Sure.
There is just some kind of disconnect where the market is too obsessed with his counting stats and his counting stat projections relative to what really wins this award, which is a combination of team success, advanced stats, and efficiency, where Luka is just frankly never stacked up to Jokic or Embiid or Giannis, really. And my second opinion is that I think Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is significantly more likely to win than Luka Doncic is. And I think that if this kind of individual surge that Luka was making now, if that was being made by Shai, I could absolutely see Shai winning the award, because he just has the team success element trump card that Luka doesn't. Where if Shai was to run away with the one seed, which I don't think he's going to, because the schedule is very tough the next, at least the next little stretch they're going to play. When this drops, they'll be playing, you know, at Boston on a back-to-back, which isn't ideal. But that if they were to get the one seed and run away and hide a little bit, and Murray stays out and the Nuggets kind of just cruise a little bit to the end because they're not that worried about going on the road to play Minnesota or Oklahoma City in a playoff series, and Jokic is just kind of on cruise control, maybe even sits a few games and just winds up in the three seed while Shai is surging with the one. In that world, I could see Shai winning, but one, I don't think that world is going to eventuate. Two, Luka is on a five seed right now. and the type of, it's like Luka's case has these conflicting elements where, like, if you want to vote for Luka and you're the archetype of a voter who votes Luka, like, you kind of have to throw out most of the advanced stats and the efficiency relative to Jokic. Mm-hmm. And people only typically do that if that's coupled with team success. And he's a five seed. So I just don't really understand what the case is. And I know there was this like big article in The Athletic where Luka was interviewed about by Sam Amick, who I believe is a voter, about his MVP chances, and that kind of helped ignite the Luka discourse. I think that literally the first sentence of that article was, it's highly unlikely that Luka Doncic wins MVP this year. and then Amick writes, Luka knows that, I know that. Like, it's very late for a five seed to make a charge and win this award. So I still think, like, I think Jokic is north of 95% to win the award.
Oh, wow.
I think that most of the rest of the market is Shai. I don't really see the case for Luka. If he surges and gets a four seed and keeps having these 40-point triple-doubles and Jokic does nothing and Shai does nothing, then maybe. But even then, I still think this is mostly done and that Jokic, in the end, I think Jokic is going to just walk it in.
Do you think that he has any control over this, though?
Jokic?
Yeah, like, is there anything he can specifically do to seal it? Right. It doesn't, team success, you know, getting the one seed for the Nuggets, like, yeah, he can't singularly do that. Like, there's a couple other moving parts involved here, especially because they don't have the tiebreak. I think, is there a Lamar Jackson type of moment where if he beats the Timberwolves or whatever on April 10th, let's say, and he specifically shows up in that game and has, you know, the game he needs to clinch, the true head to head win total, beating Minnesota, like, is that enough for people to be like, okay, I'll allow it, or does he literally just need the Mavericks to cool off and the Thunder to, you know, just, you know, either whimper into the one seed or capitulate altogether?
So I think that I kind of reject the notion that Jokic has to do anything, because I think if the vote were held today, I think he would get like 80 first place votes and win in an absolute landslide. I think that a lot of the buzz around Luka and Shai to a lesser extent is just like Twitter noise. Like, who are the voters who are actually coming out and saying, I am voting Luka Doncic? Like, I'm just not seeing that at all. I'm seeing people on Twitter talk about it. The voters, I'm still seeing heavy lean to Jokic, with like Stephen A. Smith saying Shai, and Stephen A. Smith has just been choosing a non-Jokic candidate, you know, every day for the past like 4 years. A month ago, Stephen A. Smith was voting Jason Tatum. Now he's voting Shai. Like, it's not, who's next? Like, Stephen A. Smith said he's going to vote Devin Booker over Jokic 2 years ago when Phoenix had the one seed. And then he changed his mind and voted Jokic. So I just don't think that there's actually anything real out there. Like, I don't think Jokic is off the board. I don't think it's completely done, but I think it's pretty close to done. And in terms of what he needs to do to win, I think he needs to just play in the games. Just play in the games. Don't sit out and, like, just float into the three seed. And the thing is, too, is that their schedule has so many layups that I just don't think there's going to be a slide. Like, we're recording Tuesday. They're going to play San Antonio tonight. When we're recording, they're 16.5-point favorites. They have a home games against Atlanta, and then they go on the road to Utah, San Antonio, and Memphis. Like, they're going to just get wins, so there's going to be no slide, I don't think. And I think ultimately Jokic will walk it in. All right, let's go to most improved player. A little passion project of mine. Tyrese Maxey is still the favorite at -210, at least that MGM. Kobe White, +170. Jalen Williams, 25-1. And I think those are the only three guys who have any chance of winning the award. Jonathan Kuminga's 200-1. I'd be absolutely stunned if he factors in. What do you make of this one?
Yeah, the I'm still looking for the Tyrese like voter. Like, you know, is there certainly a possibility that you know, there is a section of the voting block who kind of made their decision once Tyrese Maxey was the first time All-Star, and it's like, okay, well, this one's done. Move on to the next awards, right? And they haven't really been kind of dialed in on exactly what's happening otherwise. But I'm not sure that there is a huge amount of enthusiasm for Tyrese. And I think the fact that he's -210 seems seems outrageous. I don't know how many more times we have to say it on this podcast. But yeah, that's way, way, way too high a confidence interval for a team that right now has a cinch on them. And, you know, Maxey's like his nuts and bolts case outside of being a first time All-Star or weak. Like he was already good, and he's moved from, maybe you want to categorize him moving from good to great. Okay, I won't fight that. But like, has that materially impacted the Sixers in any way? No. You know, I think in general, like the Sixers as a team, when Embiid was playing at an MVP level, were, you know, Maxey was a perfect second banana there. But in his absence, has he been able to carry them to 500 basketball? No. And I think ultimately this is, it's expected. Like a player with his skill set and his, you know, his abilities on a team that is, that was, you know, not high profile like the Sixers and didn't have a superstar like Embiid, like, is he ever even in consideration for this award? Is he ever even getting a sniff of an All-Star game? If like, if this is just the Sixers team to start the season, but they happen to be, you know, in Memphis or something like that instead of Philadelphia, like, no, he's not even being given any kind of due, you know, case here. And I think my vote, if I had one, would be for Jalen Williams, and it would be by a landslide. But I understand the Kobe White case, and I think the Kobe White kind of marketing you know, machine that's now behind him pushing it from the Bulls is going to be effective. So yeah, this has very, very real latitude to flip. And I'm kind of confused why it hasn't already.
So I think there's a few things at play with how this market is priced. And the first thing I want to talk about is just like this market dynamic and how it's been priced the whole season. And I think there was a point where Tyrese Maxey did warrant being a -200 favorite, but that was a reality that we are now 2 months departed from. But the issue is with the market's pricing is that once Maxey got entrenched, and when he got entrenched, he was way more efficient and on a two seed and had emerged as the story of the Sixers season was him capably replacing James Harden. That was the story. And he was the Robin to Joel Embiid's MVP Batman. And that got entrenched 2 months ago. And then since then, what the market has been doing in a very unsophisticated way is just purely moving off of high scoring games. And that is why is that, you know, if Kobe White scores, he scored like 37 against Sacramento, right? His price caves. And then Maxey has, you know, he scores 21 in the first quarter against Sacramento as well. And then his price caves too. And it's just, it's not the right way to price probability in this market, because 50% of this market is shaped by things that did not happen this year. It's 50% of the market is what your base was as a player. And so the other 50% is how you play this year to improve off that base. And I think that what has gotten lost is that every Sixers loss, Maxey should be drifting, like in some way, because every game they get closer seeping into being locked into the play-in, that hurts his case. Like they're 14-27 without Joel Embiid. And Nate Duncan and Duncan, they did this research about how this Sixers team, it is the biggest drop-off in NBA history a team has had when their star player has gotten injured. In NBA history. Yeah. And so I don't think people like blame Tyrese Maxey. I don't think they should really blame Tyrese Maxey, but the thing is, it's kind of like a Inception Leonardo DiCaprio thing where, like, when they're planning ideas in Cillian Murphy's head, like, do you want what's more powerful, like a negative emotion or a positive emotion? And with Tyrese Maxey, it's like, all right, his narrative is, oh, it's not his fault that the team sucked, so I'm going to vote for it. Like, it's not as opposed to Kobe White, who has kind of changed the entire story of his career. And, you know, Zach Harper is a voter. He wrote this morning that, you know, Kobe White kind of embodies the spirit of this award.
That's a fair point.
That is kind of why I think that White is going to win, because the other thing here that I think is really key in the market is just understanding that this is ranked choice. It's not just the first place vote only. Like, you vote 1, 2, 3. And the reason why I think White is going to win is that we've had lots of voters who have said that Tyrese Maxey is not a candidate for me because he was already too good. And there are people who are going to leave Maxey off ballot, like they left Ja Morant off ballot, which is 49 out of 100 voters, like they left SGA off ballot last year, which is 15 out of 100 voters. And I think that Kobe White is just going to be on almost every ballot. And when Maxey is first, White is going to be second a lot of the time. And when White is first, Maxey is going to be off ballot a chunk of the time. So I think that they may end up with similar amount of first place votes, but I think down ballot, Kobe is going to destroy him, frankly. And I think that's why Kobe White should be the favorite in this market, because, again, like, I don't, this is a market, and we've talked about it, like, I just don't really care what my own opinion is about who should win, because it's such a subjective market. And all that really matters is what voters are saying. And from what I've seen, voters are just overwhelmingly leaning Kobe White. And the Maxey support is just outside of his market price, just doesn't seem to be there. But question for you, Drew, because me, you, basically everyone I talk to about the NBA, who's, I guess, like in our circle or whatever, everyone in our circle would vote Jalen Williams. Like, if I had to vote for this award, I would vote Jalen Williams, and it's not even close. Like, he's tier one by himself. And I keep looking at these cases and I'm like, are people going to look at the stats and just be like, how is Jalen Williams not clearly the most improved player? And sometimes I think, like, is he really going to win? But then I think some people will be like that. And then I think a lot of people are just going to be like, no, he's not a candidate because of the second year.
Yeah,
that's kind of like Maxey. He's going to be first. He'll get a lot of firsts, but he's going to get crushed by Kobe down ballot as well, I think.
Yeah, that's my read too. The second year thing, which, why you want to hold that against the player? Okay, I mean, yeah, like, you had built in some expectation that he was going to make the leap to borderline all NBA. Really? Like, you think that was really in the projection for him after what you saw last year? Okay, but he deserves some flowers. Absolutely is, and his particular role for the Thunder is a huge, huge reason why they went from, kind of expected to be in the mix to potentially getting a one seed in the Western Conference, which is truly amazing. And I think, that your case for Kobe makes all the sense in the world to me. You hearken to, like, some of the other media that you can consume across the space. I listen to a lot of the Low Post because I just particularly like Zach Lowe's, perspective on things. And, they had a long discussion with David Thorpe, I believe, yep, on who is the most improved player, or just like players who have improved. And, like, it was a long list and I agreed with almost everyone. And then kind of just plopped right in the middle. I was like, we should probably mention him because he's, the current favorite, Tyrese Maxey. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. He's improved. Moving on. Right. And it was like, if people who are really working hard and trying to understand, like, who is on the trajectory to being, all pro and really mattering in this league, I'm surprised that there is still as much support out there as there is for Maxey. And, your explanation of why it's happening, because he's got all these 30 point games, and just in general, his anchoring is a real thing. When it actually comes to voting, I do think there will be a lot of people who elect to leave Maxey off. And I think there's a lot of good candidates, right? Like, that's a huge part of Maxey's problem and why he will be left off ballots, is that, like, there are a lot of people who will just pick their pet guy. If you think Maxey going from good to great is worthy of consideration, you probably think Brunson is too. And Brunson's on a team that has won more games, so you're going to put Brunson on over Maxey? Probably, right? Like, there's definitely some, there are other candidates in the Maxey mold who I think are on, more deserving teams and who have done it more clearly. So we'll see.
Yep. Last thing I want to say about this before we move on is that I think two things quickly. There's this like first time all-star aspect, which people are pointing to that, you know, Kobe White is an all-star, Jalen Williams is an all-star. Like, I think that is much more correlation than causation. Like, I think that's really descriptive because, yeah, when you make a big leap, like often you are an all-star. But I don't think that, like, Jalen Brunson's a first time all-star. It's not like he's more likely to win the award than Jalen Williams or Kobe White. So I don't think that really matters that much. The second thing is that I think a huge part of this award, which gets underrated, is your improvement needs to be surprising, because that is a part of the spirit of the award. And I think that is why second year players struggle. I don't think so much like, oh, it's your second year, you can't win. It's just that second year improvement is more expected. And same good with point. Like the leap that Brunson has made is arguably more expected. And I think that's going to really hurt Tyrese Maxey. And Bill Simmons outlined this on his podcast, where he said that, you know, he was basically like, all right, well, Harden left. Maxey's got the ball in his hands way more. Couldn't we all have seen that he was going to go from 20 to 25 a game? Like, isn't that the most predictable thing in the world? It's like, yeah. And I think that a lot of people are going to feel like this is, you know, basically linear improvement for Tyrese Maxey, who is already really good. He's gotten better. He's definitely gotten better, but this was more expected. Whereas Kobe White was like signed for the mid-level exception and people destroyed the Bulls for signing him to the mid-level exception. And now he's, you know, a guy who's, you know, almost 20-5 and, you know, running late game offense. So that is another reason why I think that I would have White between 60 and 70% to win the award. And the market is saying that he is significantly less than that. All right, let's go to quickly Defensive Player of the Year. Rookie of the Year is done. Minus 10,000, Victor Wembanyama is a phenomenal bet, in my opinion. DPOY, Gobert. There's still some like minus 1,200 Gobert about, which also I think is a phenomenal bet. Do you think there's any chance whatsoever that Gobert loses this award?
No. Which I shared with you yesterday, the kind of the Nekias Duncan, who did brilliant job of just kind of laying out sort of here's the entire statistical profile of all of these players, and like Rudy Gobert's numbers against like his ISO defense number, it's like he's like playing like just it's absurd. This is all second spectrum statistics, like, you know, taking specific account of like what you are asked to do, your role. And I mean, you look across the entire menu of what he's asked to do and what he does do and how he performs relative to every other player in the NBA. And this is a runaway.
Yep. No, I don't think there's any suspense there. And also, like, I don't find Gobert a particularly sympathetic character. I do think that he is so unfairly criticized. Like the stuff that like Shaq was saying, like Gobert is a magnificent defensive player. And it's a weird thing to say, but he's actually one of my favorite players to watch in person. Just when you see in person, just how he alters the entire geometry of the court. There's a game I saw a couple of years ago where he played in Brooklyn while he's still on the Jazz. And even like Kyrie Irving just doesn't want to go in the paint because Gobert is there. I think that doesn't get captured enough by the casual fan or Shaquille O'Neal. And I think he's going to win Defensive Player of the Year for the fourth time, and it will be deserved. And I think that award is done. Okay, last two awards, Coach of the Year and Clutch Player of the Year. Coach of the Year, Mark Dagnall, minus 375. Chris Finch, plus 400. Jamal Mosley, 10-1. I don't think Joe Mazzulla can win this award anymore after they've dropped a few games. He's 50-1. I think he's done. Do you think there's any bets to be made here?
I'm tempted by Finch, certainly, because the Wolves, you know, if but at that point, like, are you just better off betting Wolves to win the Northwest? Wolves Northwest, you get a little bit better price, and like that has to happen for Finch to beat Diggs. But Mark Dagenaud is so deserving. Jamal Mosley and the Magic, like, just get across the finish line, please.
I think this market is actually pretty reasonably priced now. I think Dagnall warrants being a big favorite. I do think there is, I'm not saying to bet him at 10-1, but I do still think there are worlds where Mosley gets back in this, just because there's this weird like schedule sequencing thing where OKC have a really tough little stretch upcoming. Like this at Boston game is just going to be brutal for them. They're all very likely going to lose that. And they have to play at the Pacers, which is a, you know, toughish game. And Mosley has to beat the Pelicans Wednesday night. But if he gets through that, then all of a sudden there, just with the way that the Cavs and the Knicks schedule shape up as well, there is a very real chance that a week from today, Mark Daigneau and Jamal Mosley are both in a three seed. And I think that if the Magic end up with the same seed as Oklahoma City, I think Mosley wins Coach of the Year in that scenario if Denver are the one seed and it's not Finch. So I don't think he's a bet at current price. It's just something to monitor where if he beats the Pelicans and the Thunder go 1-2 in this three-game stretch, then all of a sudden I think that Mosley gets pretty live. Like the Magic at a three seed, that's completely ridiculous. And the Cavs, this Mitchell knee is a real problem. They are in a tough West Coast swing coming up. Mm-hmm. The Knicks, every game for the Knicks, have no more layups on their schedule either. Yep. And the Magic have the tiebreak against both the Cavs and the Knicks. So I think there are worlds where Mosley gets back into it, but more of a monitor for now.
All right. Please just beat the Pelicans, please. Yes. one at a time, Jay. I don't know if you watched that Blazers game yesterday, but that took years off my life.
Flashed before my eyes when DeAndre Ayton. By the way, there's never been a player in the history of the NBA less phased by missing a game-winning shot than DeAndre Ayton.
Yeah, you get him next time. No, the funny you bring up the Pelicans, though, because just want to run this by you. Would it surprise you that if the Magic were to defeat the Pelicans tomorrow, that they would be tied in the loss column with the Phoenix Suns, who are currently the seventh seed?
Yeah, it's happened quickly. So it was supposed to
happen quickly.
Awesome, like a week ago.
Yeah. Sunday, we were talking prices for Mavs, and we were way ahead of market in like the -180 range to -200. I don't even remember. No, that's like -600. Yeah. That's gone. That's done. It's done. Mavs, congratulations, Mavs. You won the South. And obviously, they got to win tonight without Derek Lively. And, you know, we're recording before this game against the Warriors, which is actually kind of quasi-important. This Pelicans team is not playing good basketball. And Brandon Ingram is not their most important player for the franchise. That's obviously Zion Williams going forward. But he's their most important player for winning basketball right now. And he is not coming back anytime soon with the bone bruise in his knee. They play the Suns coming up. Here, if they lose to the Magic, if they lose to the Suns, like this team is squarely in the play-in, at which point they really should be -1,000 to make the playoffs right now. You can get 6-1 on Pelicans to miss, which seems like a very bettable number. You can get +125 on them to be in the play-in. Like, I do not get anywhere close to that math-wise with my current rating for this team.
Yep. I think I almost prefer the play-in price just because they're probably going to they're going to host the Kings probably in the playing game. Like, the Kings are just so uninspiring as a soldier that you need to take down the Pelicans, I guess, if you math it out. But they are certainly on the slide. I was thinking about them as a potential team that could, you know, make a run in the West just with how the playoff bracket was going to break. Don't feel as good about that now.
Full transparency, I maxed into Pelicans to miss at 6-1 and then maxed into play in the play-in at +125. Okay. So there's a path where they lose and you win both. There's a path where they're in the play-in. You have a small win, even if they win either of those two games. So, this is, I mean, honestly, like it's the 7-8 that you are concerned about, right? if they're hosting Warriors Lakers, like they're going to be dogs, I would assume, in the absence of Brandon Ingram. So,
Yep. Okay. Anti-Pelicans. Like it. Speaking of the Warriors, last award, Clutch Player of the Year. DeMar DeRozan is -140 favorite still. Stephen Curry +115. I think that is the extent of the market. Now, it's a weird award, so I don't want to completely dismiss the kind of 0.5% chance of absolute chaos. But I would be pretty stunned if one of these two guys doesn't win. I am still of the opinion that Stephen Curry should be the favorite and should be closer to -180 than +115. I don't understand how this hasn't flipped yet. But that's my read on this market. Do you have any updated thoughts on Clutch?
Yeah, I mean, can the Bulls PR team really carry two men across the finish line here? Like they're spending all their effort elevating the Kobe White MIP case, and DeMar DeRozan's clutch case is getting left in the dust a bit. So, I honestly, the idea of Bulls winning two awards is hilarious to me. And I think for all the reasons we've talked about at length recently, Curry with fewer clutch minutes and more points and just an absolutely absurd points per possession in the clutch is the rightful winner of this one.
Yep. Now, if the Bulls PR team is listening, you focus your energy on Kobe. No DeMar DeRozan clutch PR, please. You know where the real position that you need to take is on Kobe White, most improved player, because he's got a better chance to win the award. Yeah, no, I agree. I think the one thing with this is that the Bulls definitely do have this narrative of, you know, clutch city. Like, they're just always in clutch games, and they have a really good record in clutch games, which I get helps DeRozan. There is also a kind of residual negative to that, where the only reason he's close with Curry in clutch scoring is because he plays all these clutch games. Like, he's played like 40 more minutes in the clutch than Curry and still has fewer points than him. I think Curry has a game, two games in hand on DeRozan as well, which is kind of a sneaky little factor. And I just think that ultimately people for this award, now team record has never really mattered for most improved player. I think Kevin Love won like a 17-65 Wolves team. And we don't know what matters for clutch, but I would think that it more hurts DeRozan that, like, the team is 36-40. And at least the Warriors are, you know, there are a few games over 500. They're seen as a, you know, lead team that could, you know, win a playoff round. I don't think anyone thinks that takes the Bulls that seriously in that regard. So, and also just the fact that Curry has 30 clutch threes and no one else has more than 13. Like, it's just ridiculous.
Incredible. Final thought, if you are a voter and you are listening to this trying to make your decision, DeMar DeRozan is a 22% usage player in first, second, and third quarter of Bulls games this season. He is a 29% usage player in the fourth quarter. Like, he is legitimately sandbagging his role on offense for the fourth quarter. You see it with your eyes, Jay. I watch it. I know. Like, I'm like, God, man, why is DeRozan getting more involved? Oh, it's the fourth quarter. Oh, now DeRozan's getting involved. Like, it is happening, and the data spells it out. You know what Steph Curry is? He is a 30-plus usage player in every single quarter he plays. And his minutes are evenly distributed, and he has carried the Warriors to even being in consideration for a playoff spot in a very, very, very crowded Western Conference at 6 games over .500 right now. And, he deserves some recognition for that.
It's funny. One of the sad byproducts of being on this Kobe White Most Improved Player ticket is that I've watched a lot of Bulls games now. And watching the Bulls-Hawks game, I kid you not, DeRozan had a little scoring streak in the first quarter, and the Hawks announcers were like, well, this is strange. This doesn't usually happen. He usually saves it for the fourth. By the way, last note on this before we hit a promo. Do you know Drew, who has the best clutch plus minus in the entire NBA?
It's got to be Jokic, right?
Kobe White,
most improved
player. Yeah, plus 103. Oh, how about that? Yep, better than Nikola Jokic, better than Giannis Antetokounmpo, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, better than every single player in the NBA. He's plus 103. Second is Michael Porter Jr. at plus 96. So, if that isn't the most improved player in the NBA, I don't know what is, Drew. All right, cap off Premier League Fan Fest in Nashville this weekend by watching a thrilling matchup on Sunday as Mo Salah and Liverpool look to stay atop the standings as they take on Manchester United. Kickoff is set for 10:30 a.m. Eastern, only on NBC and Peacock. Need a result from Man United there. The Red Devils not feeling great about it. Okay, let's talk about the Eastern Conference, and let's talk about teams that are not the Boston Celtics, who are minus 130 favorites to win the East. The Bucks are 3-1, the Knicks 11-1, the Sixers with Joel Embiid returning imminently, seemingly at 12-1, the Cleveland Cavaliers, who seem like their season is just heading right off the rails, they're 13-1, the Miami Heat are 16-1. Realistically, I think there ends your candidates. Do you have any runner in this market that's not the Celtics?
Magic 80? No, that's a big old number. I've watched way too much magic recently. But at the same time, you know who's due? Franz Wagner, man. Like, that guy's he's hopefully saving it up for a playoff run. Who the heck knows? The Eastern Conference is now. I'm looking at this shaped as like who can win more than two games against the Celtics, and it's. I mean, the Bucks are at the top of the list. The Sixers with Embiid are second. But the way that the market is pricing the Celtics right now, getting involved in either of those prices to win the East are absolute poison. Like, you're better off just betting the Sixers, for example. If that's your 1-8, let's say, you're telling me that you're not going to get close to a 12-1 type of rollover if you're just playing them game by game if you think the market has mispriced the Sixers with Embiid back. And honestly, I don't even know if I'm willing to do that or willing to make a case for that, because I don't exactly love anything about the Sixers outside of Embiid right now. So, yeah. And again, price, how do you price Embiid? Price Embiid 70%, 80%? It's very, very tough to put like what, you know, how do you plug him in terms of a rating right now coming off of such a significant layoff? So, yeah, I think this really just comes down to, can the Bucks win more than two games against the Celtics? And with the kind of limitations that they have at point of attack defense, and really just no kind of real deal step forward in terms of Chris Middleton getting back to where he was in, you know, their championship pursuit, then I just am not seeing it with this Bucks team. So happy to be kind of out of this market altogether. And I think ultimately, if you have a runner that you think is going to challenge the Celtics, the way the market is pricing these teams right now, relatively, you are just best off betting them game by game.
Yep. No, I agree. Or series by series. Like, you're just not going to get, barring like fluke injury luck, you're just not going to get the Knicks. If you roll over their series prices, like, it's going to be bigger than 11-1, which is their current price to win the East. I think it's more, I don't think anyone is a bet at current price unless you want to make the argument for Boston, honestly. I think if it's kind of a more interesting experiment, just thought-wise, to think about, all right, who, just odds agnostic, who are the most likely teams to win the East outside of Boston? I think pretty clearly the number one most likely team is Milwaukee now, the Knicks. Like, what is happening with Julius Randle? Is he going to play basketball this season? What's happening with OG Anunoby? Like, if you had both of those guys back, it might be a bit more interesting. Though I think that they were still a little bit overrated, at least relative to their chances of actually threatening Boston. If you told me both of those guys were back and fully healthy, then I would have the Knicks as the second most likely team after the Bucks in terms of chances to beat Boston. But I don't trust that's going to be the situation. Really ominous quotes from Josh Hart about, we hope to get like those guys back, but we have to go forward with the expectation that we're getting neither of them back, which is a problem. I think in terms of just team rating, the team with the next highest ceiling after the Bucks is still pretty clearly the Sixers, just because there is a huge amount of variance with that team. The issue is that they're going to have to win it with three series on the road. They're going to be dogs against, they're going to be massive dogs against the Celtics. They're going to be dogs against the Bucks, no matter what happens if the Bucks are healthy. So I just don't really see any appetizing bet. I was talking myself into the Cavs 4-6 weeks ago, because when they had a stranglehold on the 2 seed, that is completely out the door. That team is an absolute mess at the moment. Their entire team seems injured. Donovan Mitchell's knee is a massive problem that he is still missing time with. It's like, this happened like a month ago. And he's still not right. He's missing this game against Utah. His quotes were, "I can't get by anyone at the moment." That's bad. That's really bad. You can't get by anyone with your knee? It's been bad for a month. I'm not sure that's getting better. So I don't think there are any bets in this market.
Yeah. George Niang gave us the old Tipperoonski that they just wanted to fast forward these 13 games and get to the playoffs. And I think that's kind of summarizes the current state of the Cavaliers from a competitive angle. And ultimately, that's not exactly how you want to enter. You're not going to be winning high leverage series with that type of mentality this type of season. And yeah, huge part of Donovan Mitchell's game is his ability to blow by and get to the rim. And if you can't even get, you know, if you can't do that, then you can basically forget about it. So yeah, I mean, honestly, we haven't even mentioned the Heat, haven't really given them much serious consideration. I don't really give them much serious consideration. But again, if you do, if you're like, oh, here they get, these guys go again, they're ignoring the Heat, like, you're better off just betting them in the Celtics series game by game. Like, they were do you remember what they were dogs at home in like game three is a good example. They're down 0-2. They were what, 9-point dogs at home or something like that last year in game three? Like, it's the market has very, very little respect for the Heat against the Celtics in a head to head. So at that point, like, I really don't think you're better off taking a 16-1 price at this point at all, because they're going to have to do it themselves. They're going to have to beat a couple of tough teams and then the Celtics. So I don't think it's happening.
Yeah. Look, as someone who is holding Boston in the East and doesn't have anyone else, here's what I want. Round one, I want Embiid. Round two, I want Heat. And round three, I want the Bucks. I want it to be as hard as possible. I don't fear any of these teams. I'm a little bit scared of Denver in the finals. Don't want to see them in the finals. I'd rather see anyone else. But I don't, like, none of these teams are particularly frightening. I want the hardest matchups. Bring it on. I don't care. Ready to take down all of these pretenders. Giannis is a little bit frightening in the Bucks. I think when they are fully healthy, they are a legitimate team that is, I think, pretty close to the level of Denver. But happy to take my chances against.
You don't want to see the Hawks.
I want to see the Hawks. Krejci just ripped the heart out of the Bulls on Monday night. By the way, last thing to bring this full circle. So these awards are so silly. If I had silly in my opinion, my biased opinion. If I had to vote for Sixth Man of the Year, you know who I'd vote for, Drew? And it wouldn't even be close. Like Jalen Williams, I would clearly vote for Most Improved Player. I'd vote for Bogdan Bogdanovic because he has the best case. He's plus 2.6 EPM. He's averaging 17 a game on more efficiency than Monk. His splits as a starter off the bench are basically identical in terms of points per game. He is the most deserving candidate, and he may not get a single vote. And I'm not saying to bet him because I don't think he's any chance to win, but he's going to lose because his teammates are like Onyeka Okongwu. That's why he's going to lose the award. Like, it's not his fault. He's been magnificent. He's not going to factor in.
Yep.
The mighty Atlanta Hawks. All right. Don't forget to check out NBCSports.com for more information to help you with your wages. Thanks to those of you watching on the NBC Sports YouTube channel. And if you're listening to us in podcast form, don't forget to rate and subscribe. Also a reminder to find all your favorite NBC Sports shows on Amazon Music. Just head to amazon.com/NBCSports. From Jay Croucher and Drew Dinsick, we'll see you soon.